We look down from the cliffs and enjoy the meeting of sea and sky and land, but we seldom turn the other way past the neat hotels to where there used to be another meeting point. For just here used to be the old Bournemouth West Railway Station, the terminus of a number of lines from several companies who made this a seaside destination for holidaymakers from the Midlands. Let's go in and have a cup of dark tea, exactly as it would have been in the enamel cans the drivers and firemen kept to slake their thirst in the hot and dirty engine cabs. Hello, I'm Peter John Cooper. Today's Tale from the Cliff Edge is set around the old Bournemouth West Station in its heyday. It's called Fireman Smallbone, Lord Save Me. Leonard Smallbone was an ambitious lad. He always had been. From when he signed on as a cleaner in the Wincanton depot of the LS&M Railway Company at the age of 14 until now, more than 20 years later, and he was a past fireman. He had been assiduous in his study of the rule books and in attending the meetings, formal and informal, where senior men had passed on their wisdom. It had been a long and at times a cruel slog waiting to fill dead men's shoes, but he had achieved his first goal as a past fireman, and now all he had to do was to begin climbing the rungs to becoming a top link express driver. There had, of course, been no formal training. He had done it all himself, and he took every opportunity to move from depot to depot, where there might be a step up. But in every place, he had always been regarded as being a bit, well, standoffish, and dedicated only to the two books he carried about with him everywhere he went. One, of course, being the rules of the LS&M Railway, the other being the Holy Bible. Because there was only one ambition higher than the top link of the driving ladder, and that was the eventual marble staircase into the celestial paradise. He was wont to call the railway company, "Lord Save Me," and for his colleagues, this made Leonard Smallbone something of a self-righteous prig. On the footplate, he was rigorous in his attention to detail, making sure his firing was precisely correct, the firebed precisely levelled, never too hot, never making black soot, the smoke from the funnel always a steady grey. His application of the dampers and injector were always meticulous, and between shovelling and sweeping and polishing, there always seemed to be some delight in his voice when he was able to point out a warning notice or a signal from the cab window that the driver may have missed. And for this reason, there was never the camaraderie that sometimes grew up between driver and fireman. And because of his generally prickly reputation in the depot, he tended to be given the odds and ends of duties that no one else really wanted. And so he found himself on the footplate of the late night through stopping from Oxford or Reading or somewhere to some far-flung outpost of the LS&M Empire at Bournemouth. The reason this was not a generally liked roster was that it required an overnight stay to return the train early the next morning. As he was only just passed as a fireman, he was allocated a bed in the rather less than luxurious Railwayman's Hostel with the junior cleaners. The driver, of course, was given an allowance to stay in a proper hotel with clean sheets. On the first evening, Smallbone and his driver, by name Watkins, had walked together in silence from the Bournemouth West depot to the doors of the hostel and had wished each other a perfunctory good night. But as he paused at the door, the fireman was surprised to see that Watkins did not turn into the entrance of the Temperance Hotel next door, but continued down the street into the dark terraces of this part of West Bournemouth. Smallbone became worried that his driver's moral standing was at some peril and that he might be going to avail himself of the local cider. Or worse, the moral turpitude of this part of Bournemouth was known to one and all. When he arrived at the depot the next morning, Smallbone was surprised to see Watkins pushing a handcart loaded with a large packing case. As he went to collect his lamps and tools from the office window, he caught sight of his driver pushing a coin into the palm of one of the cleaners, who made off with the handcart towards the station platform where their train was to be made up. Smallbone's mind was occupied with learning a passage from the rule book requiring all LS&M staff to be of impeccable moral standing, so he thought no more of what he had noticed until they drew into their destination in Reading or Salisbury or wherever it was, where Watkins had hurried from the cab to the guard's van to supervise the unloading of the same packing case he had seen earlier. Another less righteous individual may not have taken much notice, but Smallbone was convinced driver Watkins was up to no good, and it came as nothing more than a confirmation when he read in the evening paper of a large jewel theft in Bournemouth the day before. So Smallbone was excited to see that he was again rostered on his duty with the same driver. He may be able to gain more evidence against him, and although he tried hard to push the thought away, it kept coming back to him that one way or another, this could prove to be a step further up the ladder. And so the next time they arrived under the Queen's Road canopies of Bournemouth West Station, he made a great play of entering the hostel, but paused at the door long enough to observe driver Watkins again disappearing into the darkness. Keeping to the shadows, he followed his senior man through a maze of back streets until he came to a low wall where, after looking furtively left and right, he hauled himself over and began fumbling at a window at the back of a house. Grim-faced, Smallbone returned to the hostel, where he spent a sleepless few hours reading from Ephesians 4, verse 28, "Let the thief no longer steal," along with the section of the rule book about mishandling property, before returning to the depot. Again, he saw Driver Watkins organising the loading of a packing case from a handcart into the guard's van. And after an uncomfortable journey where he was actually reprimanded by Watkins for letting the steam pressure drop before a tricky gradient, they were back at their home station. As soon as the train came to a halt, both men, heedless of the rules about checking for hot bearings and so on, were scurrying along the platform, Watkins in the direction of the guard's van, Smallbone to the office of the railway police, from whence he dragged a constable who had been busy with his breakfast, tea and toast to witness the unloading. A crowd gathered. The packing case was unshipped, tools were procured and the lid jemmied off. There was silence. The constable reached in and pulled out jar after jar of homemade chutney. Driver Watkins shrugged and explained the whole thing. Each time in Bournemouth, he had stayed with his sister to save a few shillings of his overnight allowance, and in return had undertaken to bring a batch of her homemade chutney for a small grocer's shop nearby that sold country produce. Nothing more to be said, really. Driver Watkins retired not long after and went to live a more than comfortable life with his sister on the West Cliff. Leonard Smallbone, alas, never made the links to Driver. Somehow he was always passed over for preferment. The fire, as it were, had gone out of his career. Instead, he became well known about the depot, preaching from Exodus 20, verse 16, "Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbour." There is, of course, a small addendum. You may already have guessed it. Some years later, a small grocer's shop in Reading or Salisbury or somewhere was discovered to be the headquarters of a notorious gang fencing stolen valuables that were delivered to it from distant parts of the region, hidden in and among various types of country produce. Thank you for listening to that tale from the cliff edge. I hope you weren't too shocked by the idea that sometimes crime pays and righteousness doesn't. What a topsy-turvy world we live in, eh? Well, there'll be more topsy-turvy next week, of course. Meanwhile, why don't you persuade a friend to listen to this podcast? They might just enjoy it.